welcome to another exciting episode of the Extra Features Podcast. Today we have Alan Gardner. Film Cold Feet hasn't been released yet, but he still comes here to talk about it. I have no clue why he keeps coming back. I have some theories because he's stuck in lockdown with two kids. I'm the only excitement he has to talk to all day. Alan Gardner, defend yourself. You're here.
I just realized this whole thing is a trap.
It is.
A devious trap just to lure me in and then just to make your assumptions like that. Wow. hello. Thank you for having me back, first of all. How dare you?
You're sure you're happy to be back here again?
I was 30 seconds ago, 45 seconds ago. Now I'm having my doubts, second guessing things. How's it going?
It's great. So how come nobody's seen this film? It's hard for me to look up reviews, discuss them with you if nobody's seen it.
You are right on. See, you're on the cutting edge. You're right on the, you're ahead of the curve is what I'm trying to say. We basically have only shown it at festivals so far, and then we're getting ready to sign a deal for it, and we're hoping that it'll be released in like April or whatnot. But you asked what the most recent one we finished was, and it's ready to go. So a few audiences have seen it, but now we're getting ready to share it with more people. So I'm excited about that.
Independent filmmaker. I mean, a really independent filmmaker. You do everything.
Yes.
Usually, right?
Truly independent.
How do you find a distributor you like? Like, what should I look for in a distributor?
Oh, wow. Well, okay. It's interesting now, too, because there's so many different ways to get your movie out there now. So you don't necessarily need a distributor unless it's a company that you trust and that you feel like could really help get your movie out there more and broaden its reach, because there are ways you can just, like, cut out the middleman and just put it out there yourself. There are so many ways to do that now. So basically, I mean, first of all, I look for, someone that I feel like I can trust, and that is communicative, that gets back to me quickly, and also just look for a good enough deal. Because there have been some deals that we passed on for this because ultimately it just wasn't good enough to sign away the film to this company for like 10 years or however long they're asking for. But now we have a deal that we're happy with. So, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Okay, I'm going to push a little bit more. You can tell me if I'm asking questions or no.
Okay.
How long is the deal normally for your kind of film? Is it a 5-year deal, a 10-year deal?
And what are you giving up? It's usually 10 years. When you sign with a distributor, it's typically, unless they're just signing you for, North American rights or certain territories or whatever, if they're signing you for worldwide rights, then you give up, all of it. Then they are the sole distributor for it. You can't really, show it, present it anywhere else. So, and it's usually, I think 10 years is about the norm. Sometimes we see 5 years in contracts, but usually it's 10, at least 10.
And last question before we actually get to the film. What about DVD sales, t-shirt sales, poster sales? Do you get that cash or does that go to the distributor too because he owns the rights?
It depends if they do that stuff. Because, honestly, we DVD sales, yeah, but like the stuff you were just talking about, merchandise, we haven't had any distributors who have done any of that stuff for us yet. So far, any merchandise that we've had has been through us. And so we haven't had any entanglements yet with anyone else as far as any of that kind of stuff goes. And we also don't have much merchandise yet. That's something we're thinking about.
Well, you have about 6 or 7 movies. I would have guessed that the merchandise thing should have been broached by now.
We've discussed it, and it's just one of those things. I mean, everything is time management, and like you said, we have 6 or 7 movies, but at the same time, we have like 6 or 7 movies, which means we've been, working a lot on making those happen and getting those out there. So there hasn't been time and resources yet to think too much about merchandising. But I would love to, at least for like Open Dialogue Productions, like have some, we've talked about maybe having some just basic like Open Dialogue t-shirts, hats, what have you, and kind of, yeah. So one day, my friend, one day.
So as the years have gone on, you've made 7 films. Like, what have you learned to grow? Do you find your films are getting better, at least you hope so? Or do you learn new things? Or are you going in with the same basic mentality before every film? We got our location, we're going to do this, 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 and then we write. Or do you write first and then get to that stage? Or is it all happening at the same time?
Oh, man, that's a good question. No, it's, well, every film is, basically every film is different, but you certainly, with each film, you certainly learn a lot. You take that knowledge with you as much as possible into the next film. And you meet more people too. You form more, you know, collaborations and friendships along the way too. And so a lot of those people come along with you. So, I always write first before, you know, anything else. That's writing is the first step. Now, sometimes I will write with a location, or certainly I write a lot with people in mind. And sometimes I even write with a certain, like, this is a prime example. Okay. Well, here's a good example. So Cold Feet came about because I was traveling to Memphis, which is where I'm from, which is where we shot Cold Feet. And I was on a layover, just for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours waiting to go to Memphis. And while on that layover, I basically came up with the general concept for Cold Feet. I knew that, and I basically came up with the rough plan. I knew that I wanted to do one that Brad and I would direct together, that we would produce with my buddy Gabe. And that I knew all the 8 lead actors, I knew that I wanted to write roles for each of us, myself and the 7 other guys. And I knew the general genre, and I knew that I wanted to be a bachelor party film, and that they were trapped in this house, and that a dead body emerged. Basically, the morning after the bachelor party, there was a dead body in the house. I knew that. And so basically then I went to Memphis with just that basic idea in mind. And I saw my buddy Adam Johnson's house for the first time. And I instantly knew, like, oh, this house would be perfect for the movie. And Brad and I were actually there together. So it just all kind of snowballed quickly. I said, Brad, I think we should shoot here. Should we even go and talk to Adam about it now? I haven't even written the thing yet. I just had the idea a couple days ago. But that's how it all panned out. But you definitely, I mean, there's all kinds of things we can talk about, like, what do you learn from each movie too? Because there's things that you learn about, you know, your approach to the shots that you want to get, things you learn about flow and just, you know, juggling different tones, especially with a movie like this, like the tonal balance that we're striving to strike. You learn different, you know, you're frying your skills, like working with other actors. You learn about different tech, you know, whether with the cameras or lighting or what have you, and you kind of take all that with you. So it's kind of like, I mean, I'm basically like, it's an ongoing learning process, and it will be until I die, until the very last day, as life should be, my friend, an ongoing learning process. So yeah.
You went to visit your friend's house, and you said, yep, I got it. This is the one we he's okay with this? You didn't even tell
Yeah, him. He's, well, first of all, this guy, so Adam Johnson, he's an executive producer on the movie, one of my closest friends, wonderful guy, incredible host, just very welcoming, very accommodating. And it's just one of those things that just felt right. Like, I just had this idea, like, this, again, this very basic idea. I knew, but I kind of knew, like, the general, the plan of attack, right? And then when I saw the house, I'm like, this is just, you know, too perfect for what I have in mind. So I was able to write the whole film with that house in mind, which is great, which is very helpful.
So as a creative process, you're saying that was helpful. So it helps to have a location saying, okay, I have 4 bedrooms here, I have a kitchen here, I can run the scene this way. So you're running the scene through your head, the way the actors are going to move and what they're going to say and what room. So shot selection, really what I'm getting at here.
Well, it's certainly helpful when it comes to, with every phase of writing, but it's certainly helpful when it comes to, doing the shot selection, doing your shooting script. Especially when, and that was when the tricky aspect of this film was that there are essentially 8 main characters and several supporting actors, and all, I mean, it's a big house, but all within, you know, a contained space. So especially for the group scenes, you know, working out the blocking and all the shots was a little tricky. So we had to really, Brad and I had to really just be in the space, like go to Adam's house, be in the space and like walk it and talk it through and just like map out every shot that way. Cause basically especially any scene, like all of us, like wherever it was, like in the kitchen, or in that dining area or in the living room, especially when characters are moving around. Obviously, it's a little easier when characters are sitting down or stationary somewhere. But yeah, it definitely helped to be in the space. But again, this movie is unique in that it's very, it's all in that one location. So the more specifics you have in mind about, okay, what all rooms will I have access to? And, you know, it gets the imagination going and you just start picturing. Yeah, it definitely helps. Definitely helps. Yeah,
you always seem to write heavy dialogue. That's just a trait of yours. Nothing wrong with that.
Oh yeah,
I'm just saying.
Well, Open Dialogue Productions is one of my productions.
Very true. Now my question is: you've written for your friends. You know these guys. I know how you work. Yeah. I recognize the same people. Have you ever, even in this film, had an occasion going, you know what? Hold on a second. I'm going to change that.
When you say I'm going to change that, you mean I'm going to change this line, or I want to change the way you're delivering the line, or both?
Well, I can't see you giving people line readings. I don't think that's your style.
No. I don't give line readings. I give directions. I never give line readings.
Yeah, I can see you say, no, I need you to a little bit more here. I need you to put some emphasis on this. I could see that. I wouldn't call that a line.
100%.
That's a direction. But I could see you going, you know what? I don't think that's going to work. Let's change that line to this. Do you do that often?
Oh, yeah. That'll happen. I mean, that'll happen. Yeah, of course. Like, sometimes when you're in the moment and you're shooting it, and if for whatever reason, even if it's just like a simple rephrasing, like for whatever, maybe if the line is just a little clunky when it comes out, because sometimes it's a different thing when you have it written on paper a certain way. But then when someone actually says it, you know, especially when it's, yeah, sometimes just a slight rephrasing, that can happen a lot. Or sometimes, you know, we like to add in, like every now and then I want to like add in a line on the fly or whatnot, or someone will come up with something and we'll consider it. Sometimes, you know, we let actors also, like, if they want to try something out, if we have the time to, which honestly, we don't have a lot of time, especially in this movie. It was a 16-day shoot. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of people, but if we're able to allow an actor to try something out, then we certainly will. Sometimes we'll use it. Sometimes we won't. I'll say this real fast too, in case we don't get to this. I don't think it's, I'm sure I haven't told you this actually. So, oh yeah, the other thing I realized during that that fruitful time at the airport, that fruitful layover, was that so with those 8 roles, I didn't write it for any specific ones of us. I didn't know who was going to play who. I just knew I had 8 roles. I wanted to write these characters that I felt like any of us would want to play. And we I wanted us to draw a name from a hat, and that determined who you would play in the movie. So that's what we did.
You think I'm going to let that go by without commenting?
No. I was thrilled with that. The whole thing with that was like, I felt like any of the 8 of us could give an interesting interpretation of each of these characters. And I also wanted to show how much I trusted everyone. And myself, like, you know, how much I trusted us as a group, that like whoever gets, no matter who gets what role, like we'll form like a great, it'll be a solid ensemble and I'll be happy with how we work together. So that's what we did. So basically what I did was I had a cold read, as it were, when I had half the script written, and we were in Memphis for a festival screening of Bad Bad Men. So we had a cold read there, and we actually, okay, so it wasn't technically names from the hat. It was shot glasses, and at the bottom of the shot glass was the character's name. So I gave everyone the script, I had a stack of scripts, and on top of each script was like a brief character description. And basically I had us all go around the circle and we drew a shot glass, and that's how we found out who was playing who. And then I gave, like, so, you know, when someone was playing, when Matt Mercer drew Boyd, like I gave him the Boyd script and so on and so forth. So man, it was like Christmas morning for me. It was so exciting because also I was the only one who knew what was going on. So we videotaped it so you could see me getting like, just like pumped, like, oh, you're playing so-and-so? That's awesome. Like, no one else knew what the hell was happening yet. They were excited, though, because of the prospect of all of it and us working together. So I was thrilled with how that all went.
So I would say I've seen, I think, a lot of your work, and I think I'm very familiar with your work. I may not be. You may argue, your wife may say, no, I don't know anything about you. I feel this is a very different departure from what you normally present your viewer. I find you've exposed yourself a little bit more and maybe pushed yourself in a little bit different direction.
Now, interesting.
Do you find, as a writer, I would say you expanded your world, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, sure. Okay, I got you.
This is a topic I would not have ever expected coming from you.
Okay.
But the dialogue, don't get me wrong, it's your dialogue. I definitely can feel that. But I just meant I did not see a script from you coming like this. It's not something you normally do. Usually you have somebody that needs direction, and nobody here needs direction. That's not what this film's about.
Well, it's something, I mean, everyone needs direction in some way, but I hear what you're saying. Well, first of all, I do like writing. So the through line with all my stuff is that it's very character driven, very dialogue driven. Those labels can basically apply to everything I write. And they're always very personal and like, you know, emotionally like resonant to me. And so I had done some genre scripts before. It's just that the last few movies that you've seen, were more, you know, well, Bad Bad Man was a comedy, but then, Being Awesome, We Got Lucky, and Save Yourself were all drama, comedy, drama. And so, but right before that, you know, we'd done one, it was a vampire film, and that one was also very personal. But what I like to do with genre, you know, elements is I kind of take a personal story and put it through that prism. And sometimes it allows like a different way to tackle certain themes and to, yeah. And to, cause they all kind of start with like, okay, what's going on with me right now? Like, what am I feeling? What am I observing in the world within myself, within my relationships, what have you? What's on my mind? They all kind of stem from there in one way or another. But I'm actually working on some more genre scripts, stories right now too. But sometimes I just want to write a very grounded, very realistic, you know, lifelike film. And sometimes I want to have the emotions very grounded and relatable, and the people very relatable, but kind of bring in a genre element to kind of, I don't know, shed light on things in a different way. Because sometimes people will wind up being more receptive too, like if you come at them from that angle as opposed to head on. You know what I mean?
With that. Now, before I forget, I ask, everybody knows my style. What was in the liquor glass for the shooting?
Oh, geez. It's one that I don't think I've had since then. It's one that we mostly drank in our 20s. But Jägermeister.
I was about to say, it's got to be Jägermeister. He's 100%.
And I'm not going to lie. I do like Jägermeister. I haven't had it in years. I don't think I would like it as much anymore. But we used to go through a fair bit of Jägermeister.
How much rehearsal time do you give your actors before a film and yourself?
So it depends. Like, okay, this Colby is another good example here because we all lived. So some of us are in LA. Some of us were in Memphis. And some people were in Nashville. Some people were in New York. A couple of people were in New York. So, you know, rehearsal time, and we didn't have that much time together in the same space right before shooting. You know, everyone got into town like a couple or a few days before. So a lot of it was more like I would have this, like I would send a lot of Google Docs and a lot of like discussions with the actors. And I would encourage, like I wrote a whole bio for my character and kind of like laid out my relationships with everyone else. And I kind of made that a collaborative. So I did have I did have pretty in-depth conversations with each of the main guys, especially about what you think the nature of our relationship is, the stuff that's not on the screen. Basically, I wanted like to flesh out those relationships so everyone would feel like a very specific bond with everyone else. So we're not just showing up like, oh, we're all friends. Like we basically created these histories together. I created these histories with each of the actors that aren't on the screen. So a lot of conversations and a lot of us, you know, sharing the bios that we've written with each other. And then as for actual rehearsal itself, there was a little bit of that once everyone got into town, but mostly there's a lot of conversations leading up to it. And, yeah.
So in this film, I find you hide things a little bit more than you have in the past. Usually you're just using, I guess, basic humans is the best thing I can say. I don't know how else to describe it. This time you live in disguise a little bit more. I find like, again, you're branching out with this film. Now, was that your plan to show something different in the genre, saying, look, I'm not just a relationship writer. I can do this kind of genre too and hide people out and do different things. Or is that just something you've been looking for?
No, I feel like it's something that, like, ever since I was a kid, like, I haven't done as much with the genre stuff. When I was younger, I did more genre stuff. And then as I got older, I wanted, like, into my early 20s, like, I wanted to write more. I mean, the first time I was able to write, like, a really stripped-down, character-driven comedy drama, I'm like, oh, that feels really good. Like, I feel like I really know what I'm talking about here. It felt very honest. And so I want to keep going on that track, and I always will like have that going on, but I also have always had an interest in, again, taking, you know, feelings that I can very much to relate to and situations going on in my relationships and just in the world in general, and kind of looking at all that through a genre angle. Like, again, like I've got a few I'm working on right now in that vein, and it's kind of like, I don't know, sometimes it can free things up in a certain way. Like, basically, it's like if it starts with the premise, like, oh, what if this technology existed? Or what if, you know, ghosts were, you know, all these things. And then you can kind of look at things through there. So that wasn't the most profound or eloquent explanation. But, again, it's all very personal. It's all very character-driven. It's all very dialogue-driven. But I do like to – it's fun to craft different kinds of stories. And to – I love all kinds of genres. And I love all kinds of films. So, basically, I like to take certain genres and certain – tropes in certain films and try to put my own personal spin on it.
Okay. There's exactly what I'm going for. Good. You fell right dropped again. You seem to always focus on your films. You have a bunch of guys and one female. I'm not saying you don't have other females in your film. Have you ever thought of doing a role reversal and having yourself as the one guy and having four or five females and writing for females?
I haven't thought of that specifically. I mean, I've definitely, I think, I mean, first of all, it's like, you know, a lot of it, I write from a place that I, you know, write what you know and this, that, and the other. I write from a personal place. And a lot of my, and so like starting when I was younger, basically a lot of stuff was like, you know, several guys together and some women in there as well. But because most of my friends were guys as a kid. But then as I formed more female, you know, friendships and was in more, you know, romantic relationships, then that kind of started opening up within my writing. And my basically my writing has always kind of reflected what's going on in my life to some extent. And now that I'm, you know, now that I'm married and have kids, then that's going to definitely be an element in my writing as well. And so, you know, Say Yourself was basically a guy and a man and a woman, equal footing throughout. And then the one I'm editing right now is about two couples. So yeah, I basically, you know, wanted to try to, yeah, explore more prominent like female characters. And then, but it just depends, because ultimately at the end of the day, like, I'm just trying to write stories that I feel like I have something that allow me to bring something that I feel like contributions that I have to give, like something that I have to offer, as opposed to trying to fit into anyone else's kind of agenda. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the size of the role is, I'm just trying to make, first of all, like, I don't think any male character represents all men. I don't think any female character represents all women. I'm just trying to write characters that feel honest and fair, in the sense of, like, you know, I want to write, I tend to write with like a lot of compassion for my characters. There aren't a lot of, nothing's anything wrong with, I mean, it depends on the genre. Sometimes I have villains, but for the most part, I don't really write with a lot of villains in mind. And the villains I do have, like, I want to try to make them as dynamic and, you know, dimensional and understandable as possible, as opposed to just fueled by some sort of like pure evil. Although sometimes that's interesting to write about as well, and just how other, you know, people react to that kind of pure evil. Anyway, I don't know. So I try not to be too calculated with all that, whether it's, I feel like, you know, oh, this is, I try not to second guess what the marketplace is going to want or what festivals are going to want or whatever. And I just try to keep things as pure as possible. Like, what do I have to say? What story do I have to tell without worrying about the rest?
So let's go back to your casting. You knew everybody in the film, you knew ahead of time was showing up. There's no casting involved then. Not even, because I don't think I've seen this female lead before. And if I have, correct me.
No. I did. We did casting for, so I was saying I knew for the eight lead roles. And then the other roles we did casting for. So everyone else we auditioned.
The female and the homeowner.
Yeah. So, well, John Spyridakos, we didn't audition. John Spyridakos, we're familiar with his work from before, and he's fantastic. I don't think we auditioned him. We auditioned a bunch of other actors for that role, but I'm pretty sure we just wound up offering it to him based on his previous work. And then, I think you're talking about Najara Townsend, who played, I don't want to give too much, but yeah, but played Courtney. We knew her, actually that one too, I'd read her for previous work. She's a friend of some friends and has become a friend of ours. But that one too, we just offered to her because we're familiar with her work. And had read her before for another film. So yeah, then we read people in LA, we read people in Memphis.
Now, is there a film coming up that all these universes are going to collide? We're going to have characters from different ones? Because I mean, you got to be getting close.
No, like a view. What's it called? Kevin Smith's Viewers Universe situation.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going for.
Yeah. No, I've never, I mean, I'm sure I've had a fleeting thought about it, but I've never actually had any thoughts to do that. No. I like to keep exploring different characters, different situations. We've done one sequel before, but that was something too. We made a movie called Hustled, when we were 19. And then we made a movie, then we made Hustled 2 pretty soon after. Those are very ridiculous comedies. Otherwise, no, I haven't used the same characters again. And I mean, I will if inspiration strikes and it feels like it's something I should do. But so far, no, I haven't really had that.
Okay, who'd you steal your music from this time?
Who'd we steal it from? What do you mean? Paul Vincent Haler was the wonderful composer. And then we got songs from... actually this guy Clay Otis, who passed away a few years ago, really good guy, wonderful musician. He was a Memphis based guy, and we had a song of his we met him through our editor on Bad Bad Men and Cold Feet, LJ Hawking, introduced us to him in a song of his that we played in Bad Bad Men. And then Clay and I started talking, and he sent me these two other songs. Like, would you see if you want to use these in something, you know, something new? And so I literally, those two other songs, one is played during the stripper montage, and one is played at the end credits. And so I wrote those into the script. I love them so much. So they're like, they were, even at the cold read, I hit play on those, songs, cause I knew I just wanted them in the film. And then, Clay, I mean, very sadly wound up passing away. So he told me, like, you know, he wanted me to use the songs in the movie, and then he passed away. And then I was able to work things out with, his collaborators on that and his parents. And so, yeah, we're fortunate to have those songs in the film. And then my buddy Eddie Herta has a song in there. And my buddy Evan Gamble has a song in there. Boom. Answered. Question.
So, answered. After doing this many films, do you find your audience is growing immensely? Because they know your name now. They know, they've seen your stuff.
I hope, I'd be reluctant to use the word immensely for fear of it being inaccurate, or also me sounding, you know, like a dick. But our audience is definitely, no, we've been very fortunate. Our audience has grown. I mean, the way I basically gauge that is by the number of people who very kindly, like, reach out to me on social media, or they find my email or LinkedIn or whatever. I've gotten a lot of really lovely messages, especially since. So I would get something like from Daylight Phase, which is the vampire film I talked about earlier, which went out internationally. That was our most like internationally released film. And then when Being Awesome came out, I started getting a lot more. That's when I definitely felt like an uptick in the number of fans that we had reaching out. And it meant a lot. It always means a lot to me whenever someone reaches out. It's huge.
That's awesome.
So yeah, our audience is definitely growing. I'm very grateful for that.
Well, that's good. See, I wrapped up all your questions. See how good you are at this? I can say whatever I want, you answer them. But don't worry, I have three new fun questions for you, as always.
Oh, God. I forgot you have fun questions. What do you got?
I could. One thing you do every day during lockdown that you would never do again.
Oh, geez. I don't even know if I have one thing I do every day during lockdown. Well, yeah. So keep in mind, too, that during this lockdown, you know, my wife and I had another kid and another baby boy, and then our firstborn turned two. So, you know, we've been basically in our baby, like, we're basically in a baby bubble within a pandemic bubble. So there's a lot of things that we do that we would have probably done anyway without a lockdown, just in terms of, like, you know, being with our kids a lot and raising them. I don't know. I wish I had a fun answer, but I don't. I think everything I've done during lockdown, like, I will, you know, keep doing a lot of it to, yeah, some extent. Sorry.
That one. What is the one thing you miss being stuck in the house?
Oh, geez. Yeah, I'm going to strike out on ways. Well, I do miss seeing, like, you know, seeing my friends.
I'm right.
It definitely
here.
Helps. Like, my other friends. Sorry, not my best friend. My other friends. My secondary. I miss being my secondary friend. No, I mean, again, it helps very much so that, like, Chelsea and I are incredibly lucky. Like, we've gotten to be home with our boys who we're obsessed with. So that has definitely helped a lot. So there hasn't been a single lonely moment or a single, any kind of whatever. And I'm the kind of person too, like, you know, when I was, like, I always have projects going and things that I'm working on. So I don't even use the word bored. I'm never bored. I never really feel a lull. I just kind of keep it going. So I do miss seeing my friends, though. I haven't really been able, because we've been safe and responsible, and I haven't really been able to see. I talk to my friends quite a bit, but I haven't really been able to see anyone in person.
Well, your last question is really easy to enough people. So for the home viewers, this gentleman has a guitar sitting behind him in a crypt. So that's his questions yeah. related to. How many songs can you actually play on that guitar?
I would say not many. I'm actually learning that guitar. Up to this point, I would say not many. I'm learning that guitar for a play that we're going to do next year. We're going to do it as a play, and then we're going to do the movie soon after. So Yeah, gotta learn how to play that thing. I've been chipping away.
Zero is the option.
No, I can play a few, but I can play a little bit. But I definitely have a ways to go. Again, I'd be reluctant to say that I can play any song like really competently, and you know. But I'm getting there. I'll get there because I have to.
Well, I would love to tell everybody where they can see your film Cold Feet, but since it's not out there, what would you like to promote?
Well, they can check out Bad Bad Men. It's on Amazon Prime. Save Yourself is on Amazon Prime. Save Yourself is also on Tubi.
Being Awesome.
Tubi TV. Being Awesome is on Vudu.
Can't help it.
And we got, what's that?
I don't think I've seen any more than those three.
Yeah, and We Got Lucky is on Amazon Prime. So there's a lot of stuff you can see on Amazon Prime. And some other platforms, but it's easiest usually to say Amazon Prime because most people have it, and most of them are on there. But yeah, and then I feel like Cold Feet will be up there in a couple months. So, like April, hopefully.
And you have a website to promote?
God, no. You had to say at the beginning of our conversation before we started rolling is that I'm in the midst of creating a new website. Basically, for a while now, I've needed a website that's a hub for all my stuff because I've had various websites for like different movies or production companies, but never like a centralized like hub for everything. But I will say, oh, hold on. People can check out my Vimeo page is a pretty decent hub. Let me, 1 second. Vimeo.com. The suspense here is fantastic.
Riveting.
Good podcasting.
I'm going to leave this all in here just so people know I'm doing this.
I hope so. Oh, I can't even find it. But I'm pretty sure, yeah, Vimeo, Alan C. Gardner, you'll find me. Alan C. Gardner.
Thank you for your time as always. Have a great day.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Great seeing you, bud.